Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Colonel Pete Crean, Vice President of Education and Access at the National World War II Museum. Colonel, welcome to the show.
Hal, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. We understand that there is a re-engineer of Beyond All Boundaries now in 4D. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's our most popular film that we've had over 15 years. But of course, 15 years and a movie starts getting a little old, and it's time to refresh it. So Beyond All Boundaries, the film hosted by Tom Hanks, has just finished undergoing a complete restoration. Tom Hanks shot a new introduction for us. And, we have had, over 4.3 million people have seen it before. And now it's come back better than ever with enhanced graphics, new animations, remastered technology. We put in our better archival images and really made a lot of physical changes to the theater as well. So our special effects are better, new seat rumblers, new carpets, new curtains, fresh paint. It's just really a beautiful experience now.
So the original was done in 3D, is that correct?
Well, it's 4D, and when we talk about 4D, it's you actually get the feel. So that when the tanks are rolling on the screen, the seats shake, and when you're in the Battle of the Bulge, there's snow falling on you. So it really helps bring people into it. And it was getting older, but CGI has made great advances in the last 15 years, and so it's a much more crisp experience. Now, I will say, the story is the same. That has not changed. It's the same popular show that everyone has seen and loved for the last 15 years. But it's just much better. It's more visually stunning, and it's in great surroundings.
You know, you talk to folks after they visit and they see Beyond All Boundaries and they walk out, especially like folks like me. I didn't ever serve in the military, and no one really has a complete understanding of what it feels like to have a bullet whiz by your head. But, when you talk about the sound effects inside the theater, people leave that theater with, chills down their spine.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I, of course, love to see school groups go in because the war was fought by really almost kids. The soldiers that fought World War II were 18, 19 years old. And so when we have high school groups go in, they tend to go in as you would expect high school groups to be. And when they come out, they tend to be a little more somber and think about, that could have been me. That could have been my brother, my sister. That could have been us. So it's really has an effect on people. And I think it's a great grounding for people coming to visit the museum and get a refresh or really, for some people, an introduction to the war and how it was fought and how it was won.
And in that 48 minutes, you get a taste of all of the theaters, right, that were fought.
Absolutely. It takes you all across. You know, for America, it truly was a global war. You know, the same month that we fought the Battle of D-Day, we had the amphibious landings in Normandy, France, the capital of Rome fell to our armies. And in the Pacific, the Battle of Saipan was going on. All of these things within just a couple of weeks of each other, and there were Americans fighting all over the globe. So it's a big story to tell, and that's what this movie tries to do.
And each individual theater, if you would, I mean, had its own unique trials, tribulations, challenges, strategies deployed. It was as though there were World War II, A, B, C, D, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it couldn't get much more different than fighting in the deserts of Africa and in the jungles in Guadalcanal in the South Pacific. And then there was everything in between, fighting in the mountains, fighting in the snow, fighting on the oceans. Americans were everywhere at that time, helping to lead the assault on Hitler's fascist axis of really, the original axis of evil.
So how many people have seen, do we know, Beyond All Boundaries since its premiere in 2009?
A lot of people. It's 4.3 million guests have seen film so far. And what I love about it is that it is just as fresh as it was when it opened. Now, of course, with these upgrades, it tells the story even better. But it's just as poignant today as it was 15 years ago and has that same impact on our visitors. So we're really excited that this is going to breathe new life into it and for the next millions of visitors that are going to come see it.
You know, for me, it seems that the museum takes on a new level of importance in a very different way. There's so few of the veterans that fought in that war left, right?
Oh, that's absolutely true. In the beginning of September, the VA put out the latest numbers, and we are down now to under 40,000 people left. Wow. who were in uniform in World War II. Now, 42,000 may sound like a lot to some people, but that's in the entire country out of 16.4 million Americans who wore the uniform during the war. So it's less than 0.25% are still left.
And when you think about still, after all these years, after all the efforts by so many people, still just millions upon millions upon millions of untold stories.
Absolutely. We will never be done telling the story of that war. As I said, there were 16.4 million Americans that were in World War II serving in uniform, and which means there are 16.4 million stories to be told because everyone's experience of the war was a little bit different. So there will never be an end to telling this story.
You know, it was interesting when you talked about the school-age children that went in. I'm always amazed at the stories and how many of people that lied about their age.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I'm 20 and they were 16.
My favorite story was a veteran told me, this is years ago when I first joined the museum. He said that his parents had taught him never to lie. But of course he wanted to go serve. And so he wrote the number 18 on a slip of paper and put it in his shoe and then went in to the recruiter. And when the recruiter asked him how old he was, he said he was over 18 because he was physically over the number 18 on a piece of paper in his shoe. He was 16 at the time.
Yeah, 16. I had an uncle that kind of a similar story, you know, lied about his age going in. I think he was approaching 17 when he went in. And I remember him going into the hospital when I was a young to get shrapnel pulled out of his back. Never talked about his experience in World War II, ever, not once. And there was always a lot of curiosity amongst the nieces and the nephews, you know, about his experience, but never shared them. I was with his son the other day and never shared them. even with his son. It's amazing how many veterans that come back have never really shared their experience.
Sadly, we hear that all the time. Many of our visitors come through and say that their dad served in some particular theater and say that, you know, they really wish they were able to have a conversation with them now to better understand who their father was as a young man. It's really kind of sad that those stories are now lost to history.
Colonel, you know, there's been a lot of movies done about the war. About a number of the theaters, and as I reflect upon all these untold stories, I mean, there's just a whole landscape of opportunity out there about movies with other stories. In fact, I was in our coffee group this morning, someone was telling me about a movie that they recently saw, and I'd never heard of it, about World War II. It's like, man, I've never heard, because I'm like kind of a World War II buff, and I'm like, I've never heard of that movie. I need to go find it. Is there a place where you can just go find a catalog of all movies done about World War II?
Boy, I really wish I had access to that catalog, because no, I don't know of one, but it would definitely be worth having that.
Yeah, I was just curious. I know y'all do a lot of research over there. Really, sure. People don't realize that the museum is every bit as much of an educational institution than it is just the museum, right? Because there's a whole lot of stuff going on in the background.
Oh, sure. Well, every museum worth its salt is at first an educational institution. Our mission is to educate the American public. And so we are focusing in the coming years on expanding our educational offerings, expanding the field trips that we do for students, courses that we offer teachers, and experiential learning that we can bring students in on, or also in online and reaching people through other means. We've really work to do that. As a matter of fact, we've got a new exhibit opening this week that, you know, our exhibits, while fun to come through as an experience, they really are there to educate. And so we use a number of ways of doing it through our exhibits, through our online webinars, our podcasting. So really that is at heart who we are and what we're about.
And I was surprised to learn, and you may be one of them, a number of folks that work at the museum that were actually former War College professors.
Yeah, we have. Well, of course, I was on faculty at the Army War College, and Dr. Mike Bell, who runs our Jenny Craig Institute for the Study of War and Democracy, was on the faculty at the National War College, and we have a number of others who have also taught at the Command and General Staff College for the Army as well. So the military has one of the larger concentrations of military historians in the country, and so we have been the benefit of that.
I attended a week-long school with the FBI at Gettysburg, and it was War College professors that taught us for this week-long symposium, and it was probably the best educational experience of my life about leadership, strategy, about the interaction of human beings, about, you know, the reaction of human beings on under a specific armed threat. It was just simply compelling and an educational experience like no other. And it made me feel like, you know, I really would like to have gone to, you know, more of this. And you have an opportunity to do it at the World War II Museum.
Yes. Well, one of the major projects that we are working on is the development of the Sanderson Leadership Center, where we actually will be looking into case study experiential learning for groups that come in. Because, as you pointed out, war, sadly, is almost a crucible, a laboratory in leadership. And there's numerous examples of good leadership, poor leadership. And so it's best to learn from those who have already experienced. And by using case studies, you can put people in a totally non-threatening environment that lets them delve deeper into leadership, into communications, into making decisions with partial information when time is short and results matter. And that's what military leadership immersive educational experiences let you do.
No, absolutely. And you guys always seem to be right on the cusp of the frontier of the new challenges at the World War II Museum, which makes it a special place. The math doesn't lie. It's one of the most attended museums in the country, if not the world, which is congratulations to you and everyone, Stephen Watson, the whole gang, the board. Y'all have one of the most impressive boards I've ever seen, you know, especially here in the city of New Orleans. And it's something to be proud of. And we thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you. If I might, I'd like to just let your listeners know that we have a couple of great opportunities for them.
Absolutely.
To come to the museum. On Veterans Day, on November 11th, we will be offering free admission to veterans of all conflicts. And we're going to have a ceremony at 11 o'clock in partnership with the City of New Orleans Mayor's Military Advisory Committee, where they'll be awarding the Advisory Committee's Veteran of the Year Award. I'm not going to give it away yet, but it will definitely be a name that people will recognize and someone who helped steer this city through Hurricane Katrina. And then on November 15th, we're going to have a family and military appreciation block party. And through the generosity of Peggy and Timber Floyd, we are going to have a block party for New Orleans and Gulf Coast community to explore the campus. It will be free, and we'll have family-friendly activities and performances by local jazz bands. We'll have face painting, snowballs for the kids. Tickets to Beyond All Boundaries that we were talking about will be free. And even the Saints are going to be involved. So we've got a lot coming, and both of those are totally free to the public.
Absolutely. Always opportunities out there. Always something going on. So I suggest to folks to visit your website often, NationalWorldWar2Museum.org, if my memory serves me correct.
Mm-hmm.
Always something new there to see. Oh, yeah. For sure.
Even a new exhibit this Wednesday. So it's going to be a big week for us.
Colonel Pete Green, Vice President of Education and Access, the National World War II Museum. Thank you so much for your time, your insight, and what y'all do, and congratulations on all that's going on out there.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's really a pleasure to talk to everyone.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk-In text line. We'll visit with Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer, about something that went on yesterday. We'll talk about it when we return.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. 1. It's $15 a month. 2. Seriously, it's $15 a month. 3. No big contract. 4. I use it. 5. My mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. The Saints go down 34-10 to the Los Angeles Rams yesterday. Joining us is Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hey, Neil, how you doing?
I don't know, Jeff. I watch that game from beginning to end because that's just how I am. I got to watch the entire game. It was ugly. I don't know. On so many different fronts.
Yeah, you know, one of the reasons I hate going out to LA is because all these games seem to go this way. Like, it doesn't seem to matter who the defensive coordinator is for the Saints, who's on the roster, who's playing at quarterback for the Saints. The Rams just take apart this team, at least in the last few years. That's been the case. I mean, you go back a few years ago, it was like a Week 16 game. The Saints had won. They ended up winning four of the final five games. And that was sandwiching an ugly, ugly loss to the Rams on Christmas Eve. And last year, you know, the Rams came to New Orleans. They actually stayed competitive in that game with a late touchdown. But now, I mean, it's just you look at a team that's really good and feels like they're a Super Bowl contender. And I went into that game feeling like the Rams were the toughest team on the Saints schedule. And I came out feeling like, yep, that was probably the right indication because that's a really good football team. That doesn't excuse the way the Saints played because, you know, all it did was show just how far away they are from being a, you know, whether you call it a contender or not, from being a competitive roster in that matchup. I wasn't a fan of the offensive approach in a lot of the situations. You know, I don't feel like, you know, one of the reasons you came to this season feeling kind of excited about the future of this team was like, hey, we're getting back to the offensive wizard head coach who's going to kind of modernize this scheme and do a lot of interesting things on offense that maybe we didn't see during the Dennis Allen era. Well, that hasn't happened. It seems like the offense is regressing. I didn't feel like Tyler Shuck played that poorly. I guess that's the one silver lining you can take out of it is I don't think you lost that game because of the young quarterback. You lost that game because you allowed a ton of pressure on the young quarterback and you couldn't run the ball for second straight week. Defense couldn't get off the field. I mean, the Saints ran 40 plays in that game. That's absurd. They lost the time of possession by like 28 minutes. I think they had the ball for 16 minutes, a little over 16 minutes in that game. It's a 60-minute game. All across the board, you know, the defense got bullied. You had Rams receivers running alone way, way too often. Toward the end of the game, they couldn't stop the run, which, you know, I think that's more a product of just being on the field the entire game than anything else. Yeah, just not a – it's a demoralizing way to lose a game. Like, there's a lot of different ways that you can lose a game, especially in a season where the expectations weren't particularly high, but that's about as demoralizing as it gets.
57 total yards rushing. And like you said, 16 minutes and seven seconds of possession time. There was one point in time in the game, I don't remember, we almost went through an entire quarter and the Saints offense hadn't been on the field.
Yeah, but the third quarter, which was frustrating because they had that really nice drive at the end of the first half that, like, against all odds, it seemed, they were only down 10 points at halftime because Josh Cardi, I mean, talk about a problem for the Rams. Like, what might prevent them from doing much in the playoffs if they can't kick a field goal? Because that guy's a wreck. He missed an extra point and a short field goal in that game. But no, I mean, like that was the frustrating thing is you felt like, hey, okay, the Saints offense finally got on track. You know, it's kind of like you go back to the Bears game, right? Like what kept them in that game? Well, they scored before halftime. They came back in the first drive of the second half and they scored a touchdown and suddenly they were right in it. In this game, you just needed the defense to go out there and even if you allowed a score, maybe do it quickly, get the offense back on the field. And instead, it was like a 16-play, 10-minute drive. you come back on the field, and, you know, Tyler makes a night. Like, I think there was points in this game where you felt like Tyler was leading that offense once the offensive line was giving him some time to operate. First play of that drive, he hits, or at least second play of that drive, he hits Juwan Johnson for a nice game over the middle, gain over the middle of the field. First down, you're in business, and then immediately a fumble, and the Rams, you know, take the ball on another 10-play drive, bring it into the fourth quarter. You ran three offensive plays in the third quarter of that football game. And you know, it's frustrating to see. And I don't know, like, it just seems like the Saints offense a lot of the time is kind of grasping at straws, you know, like you could say, hey, they abandoned the run. I don't even know if that was really the case in this game. Realistically speaking, they ran the ball 14 times. They only ran 40 plays. So they did run the ball when they had it. They just couldn't sustain drives. I was a little frustrated with the Taysom Hill usage at certain points. You know, obviously that long run was a nice moment, but then, you know, you hear coaches talk about, hey, we're going to put our players in positions to succeed. Well, I don't think a position to succeed for your rookie quarterback is having him off the field on first and second down and then sending him back in there for a 3rd and 9, cold off the bench. Like, that's not a position to succeed. In the fourth quarter, you know, you're talking about what's there left to watch in this game. Why are you watching the fourth quarter? Well, a lot of it is, hey, let's see if the quarterback can do something, can develop, can take steps forward. You have a 4th and 2 down in the red zone. You take him off the field and put Taysom Hill in there for a QB power kind of situation. He doesn't get it. And I don't even care if he got it or not. The decision to take your rookie quarterback off the field in a scenario where the game is over and you're just trying to get valuable reps, so you can run 35-year-old Taysom Hill on a play that, yeah, sure, maybe that's your best short yardage play, but is that the most practical thing to be doing as you're trying to develop a rookie quarterback? Absolutely not. And so I just think there's moments where this offense just seems to be grasping at straws and almost seems to misunderstand the assignment of what a season is when you're 1-7, 1-8, and down 20 points in the fourth quarter. So I don't know. It's just a frustrating situation. Because you want to see a team that's, even if you're losing games, that's improving, that's getting better, that's getting closer, and it just seems like the Saints are getting further away.
Well, the 4th and 2 with Taysom Hill that you just described in the red zone, I mean, let's play the odds. The other team is so far ahead, so what do you think they're going to do? I mean, they're going to stack the line. I mean, they hit him almost as soon as he had the ball. It was like, great, why not throw the ball? Do something different.
I mean, at the end of the day, when you put Taysom Hill at their quarterback, the other team knows what you're going to do. It's just most of the time it doesn't matter. But my issue is just the concept of it. It's a game is over.
I get it.
What's there left to do if it's not, hey, we have a rookie quarterback. Let's see if he can execute in a 4th and 2 in the red zone. Right? Like, what do you gain from taking him off the field? We already know that Taysom Hill offense is there. In a game that's within reach, sure, you know, maybe that's something you can do. But it just, I don't understand the logic behind it. And there's just a lot of things that have happened over the course of this season that just seem a little haphazard, right? Even when you put Chuck in the game last week, one of the things I was critical of is, like, why didn't that happen at halftime? Why weren't there discussions at halftime that, hey, we might go to the rookie quarterback here? Instead, you go out and you run one failed drive, and suddenly it's Tyler Shuck time, and now you're set up in a situation where his first start comes on the road in L.A. Why would you not want to do that? Because this is a predictable scenario. And you just threw him to the Wolves and against one of the best pressure defenses in the NFL, and the results were as expected. I don't feel like there's a plan enough of the time. Like, everything feels reactive as opposed to proactive. And in a 1-8 season, that really stands out.
So, you know, last week I said that the tackling was not good. I didn't think it could get much worse. I think it did. And then the coverage, it seemed as though when we were handing off from linebackers to backs in zone, we didn't know what we were doing. They were like not a defender within 8 yards of the receiver multiple times. I mean, so wide open, Newell Norman could have made the pass. I mean, that's, it was just mind-numbing watching how wide open these receivers were.
Yeah, I haven't got a chance to go back and really look at the tape to get an idea of why guys were running open so often, it seemed, in situations where, you know, you're talking about 3rd and 11, 2nd and 18, and, you know, these are just pitch and catch. Like, no one with it, like, it's not a, it, you know, there were situations earlier in the season where I think against the Patriots, you look at it and say, hey, Drake May completed a pass, but the defender was right there. It's just a matter of making a contested play on a ball. Well, that was not the story of this game. The story of this game was guys running free in the secondary. And whether it was Devontae Adams, whether it was Puka Nacua, you know, they just got whatever they wanted. What Sean McVay's offense does to you is it's a ton of misdirection. It really tests your eyes. And, you know, we've seen the Saints defense struggle with that before. You know, Alonte Taylor has struggled with that before. And he got beat on, I think, the first two touchdowns. I think the first one was that kind of goal line where they just dropped the coverage on Tyler Higbee. He bluffed the block and then went out, and no one went with him. So he's just standing alone in the back of the end zone on the play fake. And then there was another where Devontae Adams he ran a 2-yard route and had 2 yards of separation against press man coverage. No one put a hand on him. And it's just, you know, I think that there's a lot of instances in that game that you look at and say the Saints, you know, whether they went in understanding what they were going to see or not, they didn't handle it correctly. And, you know, when the run game works and they can mirror action off of that and you can boot away from it, you know, you're getting sucked in by the run and suddenly the tight end's running by himself. They had 4 different tight ends make big plays in that game. You know, and Davis Allen is, you know, the Saints got lucky that Davis Allen got too aggressive with a face mask penalty. Or there was, that missed field goal would have been a touchdown and another big play for a tight end. So now there's just so much to look at in this game that needs to be corrected. And, you know, there's not a lot of clean hands. Let's put it that way.
So talk to me about how much time Stafford had in the pocket. It seemed like an extraordinary amount of time to me.
Yeah, you know, I it's tough to say. I feel like the Saints generated some pressure. You know, they got to him a couple times. Chase Young had a sack. Jonah Williams had a sack. You know, I just think it was a question of, you know, it's a lot more difficult to get pressure when the guys he's throwing to are wide open. You know, because he doesn't have to hold the ball. And Matt Stafford is really good at maximizing his time. You know, he's not the most athletic guy in the world, but he's just really good at kind of sliding away and operating from within the pocket. You know, these old guys, you know, there's so many young quarterbacks who just want to run at the first opportunity. And you kind of forget that, you know, a quarterback that's elite at operating behind the line of scrimmage, inside the pocket, sliding around, kind of forcing leverage behind him and taking advantage of how his line is blocking, you know, can make it feel like you don't have a chance. Right. Yeah. And when you do generate pressure, he's able to get the ball out anyway, because you can throw from all these arm angles. And I just think that that's when you go into a matchup like that, it's so difficult because so much of your defensive scheme now is built around, hey, OK, we need to be able to stop these mobile quarterbacks. And then you run into a guy that's operating the way that most quarterbacks used to play. And suddenly your defense is out leveraged. So I don't know if it was necessarily a lack of pressure. Over the course of a game, when you leave the other team on the field for 47 minutes, your defense is going to wear down. And that's on the defense as much as anybody, right? Like, they weren't getting off the field, so you can't say it's just the offense that wasn't sustaining drives. You allow a 10-minute drive to open the third quarter. That's not on the offense. I don't think that the pass rush was necessarily the issue in this game. I think it was a lot about the coverage. It was a lot about, you know, getting sucked in on a play fake and just not covering the backside. It's just a bad game of football in a lot of ways.
Yeah. There was a point in time in the game, I can't remember, you may. Deuce was just beside himself about an attempted tackle where he actually even came out and said, that's not a tackle. That's not an attempt at a tackle. And it really caught my eye, you know, because I think it was a play that actually got replayed, and it was like it was almost like intentional, where I just throw my arm out there and didn't want to lower a shoulder.
You mean by the Saints defense?
By the Saints defense, yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot of sketchy tackle attempts in this game, and you know, I think it's just over the course of a game you get tired, you get worn down, and you know, it's you bad football kind of leads to more bad football.
Yeah.
And you know, early in the game, it was Puka Nacua breaking tackles, right? And that was something I was talking about at length going into the game, was like, can the Saints tackle this guy? Because to this point in his 3-year career, they have not been able to do it. And he plays like a running back. Justin Reed was talking after the game about, you know, like this, the Rams a lot of times will just treat him like a tight end. And they'll run plays that they would traditionally run out of like 12 personnel with him on the field kind of operating as a tight end, because he's just that dynamic as a player with the ball, and his size and his strength and his ability to just make defenses uncomfortable. And that's just what the Rams do. Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating because I don't know that, you know, they could play that game 10 times. I don't know if they'll win it, because they're just so far apart from a talent perspective, from a scheme perspective. And, you know, I expect the Saints to come back and play better football. I do. I think this group will kind of pull it together and go out to Carolina and play a much better game next week. But, you know, that tape doesn't go away, you know, and I think that tells you a lot about where this team is and how they should be approaching the trade deadline coming up in a little over a day, right? I mean,
so you expect anything there?
I think you have to. I mean, I don't know what the market's going to be for some of these players, but I don't know. You know, you have 5 picks right now, and you're looking at potentially picking number one in the draft. You know, if the season ended today, that's where you would be. I just don't. I don't think you could. I think it would be a mistake to turn your nose up at some offers if they're not exactly what the asking price would be. Just because, hey, we feel like we have a group here. Because I think you need to infuse this roster with as much talent as possible, and you got to take the long view when you're approaching it.
No doubt, for sure. As always, truly appreciate your analysis of the game. Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, Neil. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk.
Crazy weather we're having.
No, it's not. It's just weather. It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. A lot of comments about the Saints game yesterday, and I think one of the ones that is spot on. It doesn't matter how experienced, talented, or good your team is. If you can't perform the basics, blocking, tackling, and ball security, you won't win. And we saw a little bit of all of that yesterday that went on. And when you think that the Saints were only on the field 16 minutes in a 60-minute game, I've never seen, that I can recall, such a lopsided period of time where you actually had possession of the ball as that. 43 minutes and 53 seconds for the Rams. It's you can't score if you're not on the field. I mean, it's just, you know, the math doesn't lie. It's a basic situation. So it's going to be interesting to see how that goes. Of course, LSU was off, and the green wave went down 48-26 to the UTSA. So they are now 6-2. SLU is 7-2 after beating East Texas A&M 59-14. Those are the highlights of, you know, what's going on. LSU's taking on the Alabama. They both had an off week. This is going to be an interesting game, to say the least. Interim head coach, lot going on. No AD, no president of the school, no head coach, permanent head coach. it sounds like a perfect storm for disaster to me. It's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. This is not, you would not choreograph this, right? Not in your wildest dreams would you do so, but this is where we seem to find ourselves today. And my suspicion is it's going to take a number of years to recover. It just is. I think that's the way this will be remembered, and that's the way this will be played out. And you add to this the difficulties of NIL and the ability of players to move around and do this and enter the transfer portal. You know, it's not like it used to be. And I guess you're going to have to get real active, but I still think it's going to be a period of time because I don't think the PR on this has been good by any stretch of the imagination. And I think it has people taking a deep breath before they make a decision about whether or not they're going to head to LSU, quite frankly. And that's tragic, too, because there were such high hopes for that team this year, as we all know. All right, we'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Open Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.